Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
What's going on, everybody? We are back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren, and you can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. We have a fun guest for you today here lined up. It is Mike Berardino, St. Paul Pioneer Press, who you can find on Twitter at Mike Berardino. Mike, it's been a while. How have you been?
I'm going to ramp up my fun quotient right now. I don't think I've ever been introduced as a fun guest, but I think I have that in my tool set. I'm not usually asked to bring it out.
Yeah, we'll see if we can tap into your repertoire there a little bit.
Okay,
it has been a minute since we've had you on, but
why is that?
Well, we've kind of had to juggle studio time because they had
I've been waiting.
Yeah,
I've been available. I've been waiting. No one has given me any updates, and I didn't know what I said.
Well, yeah, no, it's nothing like that. We'll get you back in a regular.
I would hope you've known me long enough. I would hope if I did say something, whenever the heck last time was what, early October or something.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, I don't know. You know, I like to make fun of the way Tom laughs, and I noticed Tom's not on this particular version, right?
Yeah. We blame Tom for everything.
Maybe it's
now.
Tom. Maybe it's Tom.
I think it
keeping
probably
me
is.
Away.
Yeah.
So don't tell him we're doing this because he might veto a future episode.
Well, and I'm going to see him later this afternoon. I'm recording a new podcast with Arif Hassan.
Oh yeah. What are you naming that?
We don't know yet. We're still kind of trying to figure it out. But I don't know. I'm going to make myself kind of vulnerable. You know, my ignorance of the world and news and the news cycle and all that. So I think it's going to be kind of fun getting out of my comfort zone a little bit. But he's very worldly, very intelligent.
Is he?
From my conversations with him, and so from his point of view and mine, they're obviously very different. And I just kind of want to prove that you can be friends with people that you don't agree with politically and all that stuff. So we'll see what happens. Maybe it blows up. But
I wish you luck with the unnamed podcast. I think maybe that's what you should go with to
start.
That might
be right, yeah. I think we should call it Power Rankings because people click on Power Rankings like you wouldn't believe. So
do they?
I guess, yeah. It's unbelievable. You can power rank
anything. Also, you know, cheerleaders.
Yeah,
but
right?
That's another episode.
Another story
okay.
for another day. Well,
yeah.
Well, Mike, so to the topic du jour, which is baseball all day, all the time for me, we've had conversations quite frequently at Target Field, and so you know I'm thinking about baseball all the time. Obviously,
yes.
the Twins getting ready to go to the winter meetings, you getting ready to go to the winter meetings, but in anticipation of that, the Twins made a couple moves on Wednesday night, trading some, I thought they used to be called like slot, bonus slots. Are they still called that, or is it just considered bonus money now?
It appears that it's just kind of been freed up, and you do have to do it, I believe, $500,000 increments, right?
Didn't it used to be though, like bonus slot 48?
Yeah,
like, I thought.
Yeah,
and it doesn't.
Yeah,
like
I think they must have wiped that out because it was impossible to keep straight.
Yeah,
but you know, you saw the Twins acquire $500,000 from the Nationals back in the Brandon Kinstler trade.
Not an insignificant amount for what it's worth.
No, and it certainly, they've been wheeling and dealing, so go ahead.
Well, I thought that it made a lot of sense if they're not going to get Ohtani, and in my story I included your tweet that the Twins could still cycle back to Jelfrey Marte. I mean, that would be quite a coup to come back, get Marte at a cheaper price, and I don't mean to diminish the negotiation process, and, you know, there's the labor, the amateur labor lawyers that are upset that he might lose out on some money, but if his vision is legitimately compromised or worrisome. Granted, once he gets that money, maybe he can get the LASIK. Who knows? But I don't mean to diminish the fact that they offered him money and then took it off the table. I don't want to diminish that. But it would be an incredible sleight of hand, I guess, to get these two prospects in the top five rounds from this past draft, in addition to Marte, or however else they spend, which I believe you said was the remaining, is it a million and a quarter still left in that kind of money?
I think it's just a shade under that. That's our understanding. And, start with this. The Twins were able to find two teams during this period of uncertainty, the gap, the however long it'll be between the seven-team visit, the home visit or the hotel visit, wherever they did it out in L.A. Mm-hmm. with Ohtani and his people. And I just always assumed, and you certainly shouldn't assume anything with this this particular process, but I just always assumed that when it was time to sign him, and I tweeted this recently, the team that was given the nod from Ohtani or CAA and Nesbolelo or whoever they do it, mm-hmm. right before he announces, then that team will suddenly mobilize and acquire up to 75% of its original bonus pool, which there were three tiers this time, 5.75 million, 5.25 million, 4.75 million. The Twins originally were in the 5.25 tier, the middle tier. It's just I'm really not sure exactly. I think they just rotate it. Mm-hmm. And so if you 75% of that would have pushed it up just over 10 million, I believe total that they could some team and if they that was the max he could be offered if a 5.75 tier team acquired up to 75% of its original value and hadn't spent on anybody else. That's important to note. Mm-hmm. That of course that's deducted and everybody pretty much has spent on somebody at some point. So the idea that all along that the actual dollars that would be put forth to Ohtani in a signing bonus were anywhere from everything in importance to nothing in importance. Somewhere, the truth is somewhere in the middle. He'd like to, I'm sure, the teams that can only, and there's still teams on the board that can only offer $300,000 unless they make one of these deals. That's probably not a deal breaker, but it's probably helpful if you can push it up toward eight figures.
Yeah.
And some teams could. So I figured they were just the Twins and the Yankees once they were eliminated, and maybe the Yankees were still waiting to do that. Maybe they'll still jump in there with their $3.5 million or so to offer up. Would do it once a team had clarity
right
on whether they were getting him or not. You know, the Angels just jumped into the ex-Braves pool, the way the Royals have jumped into the ex-Braves pool, and clearly the Twins, and I had tweeted this too, that the Twins were not showing activity toward the ex-Braves pool, led by Maiton, who didn't have a very good year and had seen his stock drop. But I don't know this for a fact, but from the Twins' perspective, I have to believe some teams that didn't want to play in the ex-Braves pool had some makeup concerns about those guys at the very least, because they were all party to deals that were underhanded and,
right.
and they had to have known something, I would think, along the way. So anyway, there's the potential for that. Twins are able to find two teams before we have clarity to pony up a fifth rounder in Pearson, the outfielder, or fifth rounder in Benuelos, the catcher from the Mariners, and a third rounder from June in the outfielder Pearson, who was an LSU signee. Very toolsy, didn't produce at all in his first half season, but interesting work.
Yeah, and I had a friend reach out and ask if there was any risk of these dollars being unspent by the Twins before these trades came through, especially with Kevin Maiton landing with the Angels. I guess it's hard to say because there are conspiracy theorists who will suggest the Twins were pulling a fast one on Jeufrey Marte with an attempt to use this money differently, you know, maybe like buyer's remorse. But if they had a plan all along for how they were going to allocate that money, then you get a little more suspicious, if you know what I mean. Is there any risk this money goes unspent? Do they flip it back and forth to teams who want to get these Braves guys? I know that the Braves money can come out of next year's pool as well.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any risk of this money going unspent? Or contrarily, if they spend all this money, then does it become suspicious that the Twins had kind of jerked around Jeoffrey Marte at all?
Well, I don't know if you saw, but I had checked on that again last night.
I must have missed it then.
The part that I did put in a tweet that I have multiple sources telling me there are no hard feelings.
I put that in my story, and that's
important to note, because if the Marte side of this felt that the Twins had invented a reason to create $3 million, to take $3 million out of his bank account, and get it heavily into the Ohtani Derby when there was zero clarity. You know, a lot of people jumped to a conclusion that, well, maybe that was the sign that a nod had been given and the Twins were trying to get out in front of it. No, I'm satisfied based on what I've been told from people close to this situation who have no reason to inflate their versions, that not only are there no hard feelings, but there is a really good chance that Marte signs back with the Twins for a lower number that both sides are comfortable with, based on the fact that this is not a major surgical type eye problem. The way it's portrayed to me is he has a left eye that is significantly weaker than the right eye, causing an imbalance that needs to be corrected with contact lenses, not by surgery. It's not glaucoma. It's not cataracts. If this is what I'm being told is the extent of it, it's pretty mild, but it is something that in baseball, where the typical major leaguer has been proven has 20/15 vision, contacts will probably only bring him down to about, or back to about 20/25 vision. I've been told it's not going to be 20/20. It's not going to be the elite 20/15 unless they can, as you mentioned, maybe a LASIK down the road. But even LASIK, a lot of times you still need to have some form of correction.
Yeah.
So, he'll have to adjust to contacts, whoever signs him. And there's a little bit of uncertainty there. It's not going to be $3 million, I don't think. But for his sake, I hope he finds it out there. I hope the Yankees sign him for $3 million because he's been a good sport about this, apparently. No grievance filed, no anger flowing both directions, and no smear campaign against the Twins, because we've seen situations where $3 million is revoked, and that's exactly how it could fall, but not in this case.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, too, to what extent is this affected by the amount of work that teams do on these guys? Obviously, the Twins were reported to be signing Marte for quite a while, and between legal and illegal dealings, the things that we don't know, we would have at least a pretty good idea the Twins have been keeping an eye on this kid for a long time. Does that kind of feed your idea, though, that they have still a good chance to get back in the mix and sign him, even though I know he worked out, I think it was down in Florida, you had said, for other teams. But for the amount of money involved, I mean, a lot of teams that only see him a couple times just, in the last few months, I feel like the Twins would still have the leg up for the amount of money they'd be willing to offer for a kid they've been watching for a long time.
Well, the thing there is that the top end guys, the top 30 to 50 guys, really, they're pretty well known. And a guy like Marte with the Dominican Prospect League and then the events that they're brought around to when they're still 15, 14, that's the whole reason part of the reason that the Braves were slammed in the way that they were is that in the Red Sox previously the package deals are certainly a problem. That's not going to happen anymore. But now they still have to work on the part where all the teams feel this need, by the way the system is set up, that to get out in front of the process. And that's why those stories start to leak out in January, in February, kind of a rite of the entrance into spring training, where you start to see Ben Badler, who does a great job for Baseball America, and Jesse Sanchez, those guys who are all over those potential signings, start to mention who's. I mean, the Twins are already in a Badler breakdown about a month or 6 weeks ago, maybe, for the next signing period for next July, are already linked to, I believe, a Venezuelan outfielder who's interesting, and I tweeted his name. I forget it now.
Now, but do we know how much money they have, or do they know, or does anybody know?
For next time?
Yeah. I mean, I
don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so, no.
Do you think it's possible the Twins know but are not allowed to say?
I don't. I wonder. Those are generally announced, around the spring. I mean, the total pool, that's why, it's a different world now. It's going to be a much tighter system, I have to think. And there's going to be, there was already a great deal of care taken not to step by the smart teams, like the Twins, not to step outside of whatever the accepted norms were. And but even those accepted norms of the international signing period, when it comes to the Dominican and the Dominican Prospect League, et cetera, and those showcases, how much access you have to the 15-year-olds at the time and their camp, that all has to be reined in. Otherwise, what was the point of a lifetime ban for John Coppolella, which still astounds me? And Gordon Blakely is not done talking. The international scouting director has had a fine career that's now been put on ice because of his involvement with the Braves and what they were doing. I'm not an expert on what was going on with the Braves. I do know that I've heard for years, as anybody who tries to cover that side of it has heard, that those deals, it's not just January and February, that those players around, all around the game are linking up with teams which are connected to, with air quotes, those players. Those deals are pretty much hashed out the previous fall, October, November. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how they clean it up, other than they probably do want to get eventually to a world draft. We've heard it for forever. If they can have a worldwide draft where those where it really is not just based on negotiations that shouldn't be taking place, but talent order, and then how do you decide, is it just reverse order of finish, or is it some other, is it a pure lottery? Do we go to the lotto balls? Do we go to the David Stern chilled envelopes? What do we go to? Because it needs to change. But Marte, rebuilding his market out there, like you said, did work out in November in Orlando. Nothing came of that that got him to sign. And yes, the Twins would seem to have the most familiarity, because they had him in their complex for however many months, and they had him in their sights for even longer than that. So they know Marte and his family and everything about him. The fact that there are no hard feelings, and that they can move forward from this if they can agree on the new signing bonus, is encouraging from a Twins perspective.
So let's get down to brass tacks on these two guys the Twins acquired on Wednesday night. David Bonuelos, a catcher from the Mariners. And, I think it speaks to the Twins' depth of system. I know they're not regarded as a top 10 system for top-end talent, but I haven't seen an updated MLB list with Bonuelos on it, but I suspect if he makes it, he'll be mid-20s, maybe lower than that. But he was number 10 for the Mariners. Pearson number 5 in what is a very shaky Angel system. He'll be 22nd for the Twins. I think you got to look at that Twin system, though, and really appreciate that even after the graduations of basically all the key players on the MLB roster right now, it's not a farm system that's bereft of talent. Would you agree?
No, I just went through the process for Baseball America of putting the Twins top 30 together. It's been submitted. It's going to come out in a very near term issue. But yes, there's some jostling now that has to go on with these two new pieces. Mm-hmm. And I don't have exactly where they're going to slot in, but I think somewhere between 20 and 30 makes sense. I did say, I'm not going to reveal too much, because I have to do a chat for Baseball America to lay out my reasoning and what I was hearing sometime after that top 10 comes out, I guess. And then, so I can't give out too much, but it's going to be hard for those guys, depending on how the Rule 5 draft goes, where the Twins really could get dinged two or three times. We'll see. There is an industry expectation that Nick Birdie, Cole Stewart, maybe a Jake Reed, maybe a Lewin Diaz, these guys will be appealing to teams, whether they think they can keep them on their active roster for 90 plus days next year. Yeah, that's another question, but I tend to believe that they'll lose two. Feels like two is a good number. That's my over under. So I think already this Bonuelos, based on what he achieved in college at Long Beach State as a dirt bag, and I love that dirt bag.
I love that
thing.
Too.
He's a dirt bag.
Isn't that is that where Jared Weaver went to college?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and there have been a number of dirt bags. Jason Vargas, I think, a dirt bag. But these guys, that's a fine program, and he was a finalist for the Johnny Bench Award. He had great pop times and arm strength and all that. Well, these things, his on base is encouraging, I guess. And
yeah,
the nice thing too is he's
isolated discipline last year, even though he wasn't great in Loy ever.
Wow, I've never had very good isolated discipline. I'm sorry to hate that term. It's depressing to me, but in any aspect of my life. So please stop isolating it. But David Banuelos, to me, I'm going to suggest, it doesn't mean Baseball America editors will go along with this in the post-John Manuel era, but and he liked to tweak the list too. Back
is he
when
moving
I would
to Minneapolis,
to
by
him.
The way?
No.
He's
no,
just
that's
staying
one
here.
Of the, he just tweeted a photo of him with his son Alex at a Carolina basketball game. You're not getting him out of that state.
Well, and I thought maybe he'd move after the school year or something. Or I don't know, but yeah, he's got his.
No, I don't believe so. Now maybe something has changed, but the last I heard, that was one of the appeals. Was it? And I think he said that publicly that he was going to get to stay on the home front and handle scouting assignments down that way. Good. And I think any department head has to move to Minneapolis. That's the way the Twins like to do it. But I think people,
Sean
Johnson moved. Yeah, I think that the people at assistant levels and below, I think they can live around the country. But anyway, Banuelos, to me, because he's a young college draft, you got $300,000 in the draft, which is not. Twins went overslot to get this Andrew Bechtold, who will make their top 30 out of Chipola College. He's a very interesting third baseman, but this guy got $300,000, Banuelos, and the fact that he's less than a year old, older, 359 days older, I believe, I tweeted, than Ben Rortvedt, who was an older high school draft in the second round. Mm-hmm. That kind of narrows that gap, and I think you can make a case that Banuelos should be a couple slots ahead of Rortvedt based on the fact Ben really only hit for about a month this year at the Midwest League.
Well,
so,
it was always going to be a slow burn for him hitting-wise, right? I mean, Rortvedt? Because a Wisconsin kid, maybe.
Yes. And I think he's closed up some of the holes with the footwork, and mm-hmm. the pop times are good, and they like a lot of things about him. But they're going to be in that same range probably. But I think Edge Banuelos as their top catching prospect. He's just farther along, and he's not that old. And then Mitch Garver is still eligible for this list. He's 27 next year. It'll be age 27 season mm-hmm. for him, I'm hoping to get him on this list. But I think Banuelos, you can make the case certainly that he's instantly their top catching prospect. And because Navarreto has never hit, even though he's all airport, as they used to say, Vital and Al McGuire. But so that's that seems pretty good.
Where do you rank Banuelos on the Stuart Turner factor? I mean, defense is good.
Yeah.
Where's the bat? I mean, I know they think he could be decent, and then the bar is not high to clear, as we saw with Jason Castro this year, to be a good offensive catcher. But is this a future high-end backup Rene Rivera / Jose Molina, as I see some people say? Or do you think that the sky is a little bit higher for him?
I don't know. I don't know what his early framing data might show. I don't have that, but
they probably don't do it for low A yet.
Yeah, it's right. It starts maybe double A, but there are indications. Yeah, that he's going to be that kind of high end piece. And the nice thing, let's just cut to the chase. The Twins in those two pieces in Pearson and Banuelos, they get guys who received $1.3 million worth of signing bonus money in June, mm-hmm. and the Twins aren't actually paying any of that money. They just gave they're not giving the $1 million to as you said,
it's
mythical,
permission.
Right?
It's
didn't you
permission.
Call it mythical? Yeah, so it's spending. Basically, it's like taking if I had any room, any credit room on my credit cards, I could I could say, here you go, Brandon. Here's $1,000. You can spend it however you want, but it's not coming out of mine. imaginary if it worked that way. Of course, they'd come after me, I'd be miserable.
If it's okay with her, it's okay with me. That's kind of so, like you tell your mom and your dad when you're trying to ask for permission to go do something.
Yeah, I just think this is an astute way, shrewd, you called it. It's whatever it is. It seemed to work out pretty well because they're not mega. They're certainly not mega prospects. It wasn't too long ago that the Trey Turner days, where this would have had to be a player to be named it because you could not transfer organizations until 1 year after your draft date, and that was annoying. Mm-hmm. And really unwieldy because you had to let them continue to develop. How do you put in a development plan for, a pitcher, especially in somebody else's organization, and you're not there? But that continued to exist right up until the last agreement. So they got that out of the way. Pearson, interesting. I don't know if he'll be able to throw well enough to stay in center based on what we're reading.
Does he know Enloe, do you think?
Oh, yeah. They're buds. You see that on – they were
– the LSU commits.
I don't know how far apart Monroe and St. Amant, which is right outside Baton Rouge, are, but they were LSU signees, and Enloe on his Twitter was already talking about how lit this will be, I believe. The guy's pretty toolsy, and you make a fine point, Brandon, that the Angel system is trash for the most part, mm-hmm. and has been for forever. But he was number five, and so that's something. The fact that the Twins were in on him at the draft, he was taken nine spots after Blaine Enloe and got his $1 million. Enloe took him $2 million to get signed out of that LSU commitment. So the Twins, they're not going to be having a salute to the Twins at any LSU baseball games anytime soon.
No.
But and they'd gotten Ryan Eads, too, out of there in second round back in 13. But Ryan Eads still going. It had a very nice fall league and could be Rule 5'd as well. I doubt it, but he was – a lot of people saw him. So – and a good guy, too. Stood there and did the video with me while I was out there, which is not all that enjoyable for those guys. But – it'll be interesting to see. Now, this guy probably ends up, Pearson probably ends up playing left field with power and speed, present and future, and what's wrong with that? So, and again, you don't have to pay him. He's already got his $1 million. It came from the Angels, and you're just giving the Angels the spending power to do something with Otani that he may not even allow them to do.
So I'm going to come full circle on John Manuel. Do you guys know each other from college?
Why, yes.
Okay. So that wasn't a stab in the dark.
Yeah, I have not even bothered him since he took this job because I know he's busy and I want him to do well. We're all proud of him. Yes, I've known him since he was several years behind me. I had already graduated, but he made his mark in campus media very quickly, the same way I did. And, and after I had left Baseball America, put in a good word for him with Alan Simpson and Jim Callis, as I did for Will Lingo, and they made two fine hires. I think I was 2 for 2 there. There are no residual bonuses. I don't get a percentage of what they made, but I should have. I should have written that. I think it was a pretty good referral. I should have gotten like an Amazon gift card or something, but nothing. Nothing at all. I set them up over a couple decades each, but that's okay. He's was mentioned. He knows everybody, and universally respected and appreciated on the college game too. It's very interesting. I don't know exactly. We'll find out maybe at the winter meetings. Look forward to hearing the story of how the Duke pitching coach ends up being the Twins' minor league pitching coordinator. Of course, they reached down to the college ranks for their catching coordinator, Santa Clara guy, but. A Duke guy for the last 2 years, just 2 years, there in Durham, right near Baseball America World Headquarters. There had to be some familiarity. I don't know if that was the initial recommendation, but certainly John could vouch for him.
Well, what I like about these hires is that they're not recycling, I don't want to say washouts, but previous people holding these jobs. And, part of the deal that I want to see is people getting chances for these jobs that it goes all across baseball, whether it's writing about baseball, podcasting about baseball, scouting baseball, GMing. I like the idea that all these people, especially pitching coach with Garvin Alston, You know, it's great. One thing I want to ask you though, Jeremy,
I will say let's insert there though that Bob McClure, who's been a pitching coach and done very well in multiple markets, three at least. He's been hired to be their overall senior pitching advisor, which is a pretty nice role too.
That name carries plenty of weight in pitching.
Yeah, well, and Molitor, you know, he's a good friend of Molitor's, having played together for a decade. How much will we see him around the Major League clubhouse? I don't know, but he's there as a resource. I'm sure. I'm sure he'll give Garvin his space. He's there as a resource for Garvin Alston. He's there as a resource for Mackey from Duke and anybody else through the levels. They have excellent pitching coaches all the way, you know, from Stu Clyburn, Ivan Arteaga, Henry Bonilla, J.D. Martinez, all the way through Virgil Vasquez, Sidney Bayo. There are some really sharp minds throughout the system. None of them were elevated to the overall pitching coordinator at this point. I'm sure there's some disappointment. They're all qualified, but maybe a little tutelage from Bob McClure in the next couple of years prepares them for that next jump. I think that's the model that the Indians and the Rangers have, but especially the Indians. And that Derek Falvey comes through is this you're constantly training the person that you're overseeing. You know, the person one rung below is being trained. Now we just see that again, Brad Grant with the Indians stepping aside after a long run, a decade as the scouting director, making the final call on draft day, and the man that he had trained has taken over that role. It's a pretty good way to go about it, as opposed to, you know, some realms of corporate world, maybe a more toxic environment where it's like, I always remember as a Dolphin fan, Gary Aprimian wasn't a very good passer, and he also wasn't a very good mentor. He was not a very good mentor because he was notorious for whatever. Every training camp, the Dolphins in the 70s would bring in a different kicker to challenge Garo, and Garo would just basically bully the guy. He'd just freeze him out. He would turn people against him. He'd make the guy so nervous he couldn't even kick an extra point, and then they would cut that guy, and then Garo would keep going. Eventually, Uwe von Schaumann came along, and he didn't care what Garo said, and he took his job.
Nice. I love that. What one thing I like about how they've built this system, too, is that it's former players like Jeremy Hefner, people with no playing experience at all. There are young and old. Jeremy Zoll, who was coming over from the Dodgers, a good organization to steal talent from, is obviously very young. John Manuel, I'm not saying is old because I don't want to say that in your presence, of course. But
what?
So I did a little amateur investigation work, and it looks to me like Jeremy Zoll was born the year John Manuel graduated from high school. So I mean, the Twins are going, you know, they're not committing to just young, they're not committing to former people who've been in the game. I like that they're willing to do pretty much whatever it takes to get people that they can get into their quote unquote collaborative effort, which is what I think you were describing with training goes up beneath you. So I think, they're not being ageist. They're not being discriminatory in, well, we're only going to go young because that's the way of the game. Would you tend to agree with that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're still learning. And Daniel Adler, I think you mentioned that. I mean, those are some, 30, he was 30 when they hired him. So, you know, if in a perfect world, all these additions would have been made and no one in the 60 plus range would have had to lose their job. But there have been a handful more veteran people, very outstanding baseball people who have lost their positions with the Twins along the way. And I'm not a big fan of that at all. But you have to, you know, if you want to avoid the lawsuits, you need to have hiring and dismissal patterns that are not blatantly ageist, to use your term. And I think they've done that well. And then they're looking for fresh ideas. They're not afraid to dip into the college ranks. They've raided the Dodgers now twice because they got Jeff Pickler from their player development slash scouting. Yeah, I mean, people hadn't even really considered putting him in uniform again, I guess, because he was so advanced with the scouting and what he was doing on a player development side. And there he is playing a very significant daily role along with Jeremy Hefner to bring that data to pitchers and hitters. And you saw the results in year one. And then they go get Zoll, who's a Haverford man. It should be pointed out he goes from the embrace, not just that, they go from the embrace of Josh Burns, one of the many very qualified former GMs in that Dodger front office. He's being trained by a Haverford man, one of Thad's best friends and former teammates. And then one of the black squirrels ends up going across the country to the Twins and taking over the farm department after Brad Stile is promoted over to pro scouting director, which they basically created that role. And it should be pointed out that if the timing had been different, if Gabe Kapler had, you know, it was important that the Twins struck when they did. Because if they had waited another week or two, right, Brandon? I think Zoll stays put, and he's the Dodgers farm director.
Yep. I asked around about that, too, and nobody knew for sure. But did I text you that? I can't remember. I think we talked about it, too. But it's
no comment.
I wonder, though, if he would have gotten that job if Kapler – and I hope Kapler does well. That's a very it's a fun organization with Kapler, who – has been good to me, and then obviously Terry Ryan, Andy McPhail. You know, there's some fun ties over there. But
Kapler's been good to you?
He is to me, but I mean, I can't say that.
Have you had him on the podcast?
Tried, man. Now he's swamped. Maybe
I bet he'll do it. I bet he'll do it. You just gotta talk. You know, what is the pet topic he likes to talk about?
Some nutrition and.
Yeah,
things you should do with coconut oil.
Things that Howard Eskin is uncomfortable with. Yes,
of course, we all are. speaking of moisturizing,
that's another episode.
Speaking of moisturizing, you're heading off to the winter meetings where it's going to be sunny and bright.
Good segue.
Yeah, not bad, huh? So when we look at the starting pitching market, there was a big five. Now it's a big four because Ohtani's not coming to Minnesota, and they're not all even, obviously. We've got Darvish, you've got Arrieta, you've got Cobb, and who am I missing? Lance Lynn?
Lance Lynn.
Yeah. So it seems evident to me that if the Twins were ever going to sign one of those types of pitchers, this is the year to do it. But there are going to be a lot of teams in on those guys for very good reason. Do you think it's realistic to expect the Twins to sign one of those guys?
Expect might be a little strong, but I'm not ruling anything out, nor are they. I think they'll stay, as they like to say, fully engaged on most of those guys right to the last second, especially Darvish, because Thad Levine knows Darvish's work so well, and Darvish really is a big fan, I keep hearing, of Thad and how he treated him in Texas. But, you know, how much, if he's asked to leave money on the table for comfort, you know, how much would he be willing to leave? That's the question, because he really, you know, the early expectation, the early forecasts are $25 million a year for, you know, times six or something. So, you know, that's $150 million for a guy who has Tommy John in his rear view, and he has some back issues in his rear view. And then you know, it'd be a new market. It's a lot you're not sure about. But I have to believe that there'll be involved with, you know, keep in mind that Darvish, his agent is Joel Wolf, and Joel Wolf's a little busy with the Giancarlo Stanton decision-making process right now. So that's mainly
hostage situation.
I'm certainly holding up Darvish. I'm not that if somebody wants to come along and give Darvish six for 150, that he wouldn't sign right then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, clearly no one's doing that yet. And in the end, I would think, you know, something in the total value of 120 might get it done if it was the right market situation. Now, would the Twins be willing to do that? I'm just totally guessing based on what other contracts look like and what Darvish's career contributions are. What do you see it settling in at, regardless of where he goes?
Well, when I broke it down, I mean, I think $25 million is going to be the stepping point for per year. And he's, what, 31, I want to say?
31,
It's hard for me to see less than 5 years. So 5-125, I'd start at and see where you – see if that gets you at the table, you know, the final table. You know, you need to know if the city is a fit. You need to know if the rest of the team is a fit. For me, The fact that the team only has $20-odd million committed next year, that's with Byung-ho Park wiped off the books, and it's committed to guys like Phil Hughes and Jason Castro, so it's not exactly cornerstones. Again, arbitration-eligible guys, so on and so forth. I'm willing to pick a free agent either this offseason or next to splurge on, but it needs to be a transcendent talent. So Darvish, to me, qualifies. Arrieta less so. I like Lance Lynn more than most. I want to talk to Lance Lynn in the clubhouse every fifth day, but I'm not giving him $20 million per year. So for me, Darvish at 6 and 150 or 5 and 125, I'm listening.
If I were the Twins, it's probably, like I said, 120 kind of jumps out at you, something where it could settle. If I'm the Twins, I try to really play the comfort factor and the Thad Levine aspect and the rising team. You know, he wants to get back to the World Series as soon as possible. There'll be some non-contenders that will be trying to buy him, and the Twins will have a leg up there. Mm-hmm. I would think that it just kind of hits you right between the eyes. You don't know what will happen with Joe Mauer, whether there's a way to extend him at a more palatable number based on his new position and his new age. But it's not going to be $23 million a year. But the Twins were able to pay him $23 million a year. So they've had a $23 million a year player.
Yep.
And that suddenly they know that a year hence they will not. So it wouldn't shock me if what their best, very best offer to Darvish is happens to be, you know, 23 a year. But mm-hmm. And if you do that, you do 5 years, you're talking 115, right? So 5 for 115 is quite a step up. It would be quite a step up for an organization that historically has never paid a starting pitcher more than $14 million on average annual value.
But you can win a playoff series with Darvish, Santana, Barrios. Like, you can go into Yankee Stadium next year and win 3 of 5.
Yeah, the other thing driving some of this, Brandon, I think, you have to know your close competitors, regardless of your industry, and your close competitors in a sport are your division rivals.
Well, and Cleveland's going to lose Bruce Santana. I mean, possibly, not for sure.
I'm not sure they're vulnerable. I'm not ready to go there that they're vulnerable at all, but I think it really improves the Twins' odds of getting into the 90-plus win range.
Oh, yeah.
When you realize that the Tigers are entering a rebuild or in a rebuild.
The Royals are going to lose 4 free agents.
The Royals are now ready to cycle into a rebuild that's going to take multiple years, and the White Sox are in a rebuild that's very, very promising, mm-hmm. but is not going to reach its fruition probably till 2020. So
yep.
there's a window now. Conservatively, the window for the Twins to be no worse than the second best team in their division is 2 years, 18 and 19.
Yep.
Conservatively, if you want to get out in front with it, you can say, well, what are the chances the Tigers with, Mr. I gone, rest his soul, the kids are going to ever spend like that again? Not too good. What are the chances the Royals ever get out there and spend like they did on Alex Gordon for other people? No, not if they're going to let these core people go.
Yep.
And what are the odds that the White Sox, ever do things right again? They had their one championship. They always screw it up. So,
or if they're the second Royals and it takes forever for these guys to develop.
Yes. Yeah, there's growing pains. Yeah. The Twins may involve – they may experience some of those growing pains too, and that's why I think it's interesting. It is interesting that a team that has 4 openings on the 40-man roster, which is, to me, 3 too many.
I was going to ask you about that.
I don't get it. No one's explained it to me yet, but it's 3 too many, did not, in flipping $1 million to the Angels and $1 million to the Mariners, get back a 40-man level piece.
Yeah, I teased that too. They have the room. I thought maybe a reliever, James Pazos or a
sure.
I don't think they have Theodore
Rivera.
Wouldn't
that have been interesting?
Yeah,
wouldn't that have been interesting to get Pazos after he's the guy that Littell was traded for of the first time,
right.
So they could have Littell in him. Uh-huh. But they didn't do that. So what does that tell you? Does that tell you that 18 still isn't really their window? Maybe. Maybe they still believe that their true the window of full-fledged, we can go eyeball to eyeball with the Indians and win this division starts in 19. I don't know that for a fact, but that's just a kind of a little indicator to me that both of those guys are set 2017 draftees when they're already well ahead of the pack with money invested and talent collected from the 2017 draft. That number now is it's fun to monitor. It's like 15.57 million or something, and you know that's a couple million more than the Reds have accrued in total 2017 bonus level talent.
They hacked the draft, basically.
Yeah, I mean. And in the fact, what is it? Maybe seven or eight other teams even got to 10 million based on how the system was set up with the cascading bonuses. So the Twins liked the 2017 draft. They liked the depth of it. They made a really intelligent gambit in retrospect to just go cheap on rounds 8, 9, and 10, load up on the higher rounds to go for a Landon Leach and a Blaine Enloe when they did, to get Brent Rooker when they did. Bechtold to go well above slot there in the fifth round. I mean, that's like third or second round quality, maybe, based on the way he's performing and what they're saying. Charlie Barnes in the fourth round, that was a good solid, advanced left-hander with a real good changeup. Ricky De La Torre in the sixth round was projected a couple rounds above that. They did really well. Seventh rounder, Riley Waddell, they got him out of a North Carolina commitment. Unfortunately, and so then 8, 9, and 10 they went cheap, and then they got a guy in the 14th round who they're really excited about, will probably be in their top 30 a year from now, named Derek Molina, who's a right-hander who projects as a starter and can run it up there in the mid-90s. So and then they go and do this, two more pieces, so they're just almost doubling down, like you say, hacking the draft, but it also tells you another indication that they do not feel necessarily that 2018 is the be-all, end-all of their window. It's open, but maybe it's like the way you do it when it's 12 degrees out here in Minnesota, right? You just open it a little bit to get a little fresh air, but you're not slamming that thing all the way open until we're back above freezing.
Yeah, are you thinking – I have to ask you before we get into relievers quick – do you think there's any chance they add a bat? There are some bats I like at varying levels, whether it's...
I know you really want a bat, don't you?
Well, I like Carlos Santana. I like Logan Morrison. Guy. Yeah, well, Logan Morrison, too. I think he's a loose cannon.
Yeah, I covered him from the beginning. I knew Logan when he was an A-ball, and
I know
he's one of the last...
He's goofy, but do the clubhouse guys like him? Do the clubhouse guys like him?
I don't know. I don't know him as well now. I know that he's been in a few different places. I would be wary of introducing. I don't think he's a bad guy at all, but I'd be wary of making a big investment in him because he does love him some Logan Morrison, some Lomo. But
it sounds like Danny Valencia a little bit.
Not a bad guy. But. No, but certainly an active tweeter from early on.
Yeah,
and not a, you know he's one of the very few players in baseball who had to. I believe he was suspended briefly by the Marlins for, you know, aggressive tweeting, but too much TMI tweeting. Kind of like a Gabe Kapler situation, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe Gabe will get him. But
reel him in.
Yeah. Positionally, I'm with you. If there's a way to get Carlos Santana there affordably, you feel that that's an opportunity. They'll be opportunistic. I think certainly the order I keep hearing is starting pitching. If they're going to be aggressive somewhere, it's going to be starting pitching, and it should be.
Yep.
But I'm not in favor of saying, wow, we almost got Darvish. Let's just go overpay Alex Cobb by $3 million extra per year. I'm not in favor of that. Right. I don't see the point of that. The Nolasco example should be fresh enough for them. The Phil Hughes extension example is definitely fresh enough for them to realize that starting pitching, you got to have it, but you really can't screw it up either. So I'm not going to blame them if they're not aggressive on Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb. I'd like to see them find a way now with all these extra in a deeper system. They have fortified this system since they got here. They've been here now fully 13 months, the Falvine regime. They have beefed up that system. And they have some pieces if they want to try to get in on a Jake Odorizzi, who I really think is undervalued, and arbitration, you can control him for 2 years at a maximum probably of $16 million, $8 million a year AAV for Jake Odorizzi for 2 years. Yes, it's going to cost you some interesting pieces. That's what they're paid to do, to figure out which pieces the Rays want. And you keep hearing from teams that are engaging with the Rays, other teams are like, man, they are tough to deal with. They want the moon. And they have every right to ask, but at some point, They will. I don't think they're going to trade Archer. I think they'll trade Odorizzi and some other pieces. They already traded Boxberger. But and then the Pirates are in this weird spot because of McCutcheon's career arc. They're not totally committed to a rebuild, but you can tell they're itching. Neil Huntington is itching to go ahead and do the rebuild. Let's say a Stanton doesn't go to San Francisco, and then San Francisco goes and gets McCutcheon, just since they've been linked to him. Maybe that's the thing that then pushes the Pirates is to go ahead and say, oh, Gerrit Cole, Scott Boras client, no way we're going to be extending him. Mm-hmm. 2 years of arbitration left for him, maybe 18 or 19 million total. Well, you're going to have to back up the truck to get him. Yep. But Gerrit Cole, for 2 years.
And he's really good.
I really like those two examples. There's a couple others that certainly on the free agent market that could fall down. But when you see what Mike Minor got as maybe as a swingman, mm-hmm. 9.3 AAV for 3 years as a swingman who was really only healthy and good for 1 year, that's an indication where the market's going to go, Brandon, for those in-between guys. Well, I don't know how many really legitimate number three or better starters are going to fall through the cracks. If you want to go get a legitimate number three or better starter, like you say, somebody who can start for sure in a division series, mm-hmm. to take the ball for a start in one of those division series games, along with Brios and Santana, you probably need to dip into this talent and do business with the Rays or the Pirates in this case, and it really could be worth your while because the value you're going to get on an Odorizzi and a Cole over those 2 years you take all the risk away, mm-hmm. of hamstringing your roster, your payroll, of putting yourself in a position where you've got to trade somebody that you don't want just to move money, that you don't want to move just to move money. You take all the risk out of it to me financially by going to get one of these 2 years, a 4+ arbitration guy, as it were. So I like that model. Teams have been able to do that, but it can be costly in terms of the players you have to part with. It could cost them an Eddie Rosario, for instance. It, mm-hmm. It could cost them, a couple of their young arms. Taylor Rogers, everybody who's going to not want to have to pay Brett Cecil dollars for a left-handed setup guy is going to want Taylor Rogers. Well, if that ends up getting you Jake Odorizzi or Gerrit Cole, you have to listen.
I think they need two relievers. What say you?
They'll throw more arms against the wall than that. You're talking two more additions to the 40-man.
I'm thinking... I think Pat Neshek is a really good fit. You can mend some fences there in a 1 year deal for a guy at that age. You're not blocking anybody, but he's going to be.
He'll get more than 1 year.
I'd sign him to a 2 year deal too. I don't think it's risky because he's.
Might get three.
You think so? Maybe. Yeah. But he's not predicated on velocity, so he's got a lot of things going for him where I don't think it's going to be as risky as a guy with velocity like a Juan Nicasio. I don't know. I'm looking at getting two guys, and then you start moving people like Tyler Duffy up the ladder a little bit or down the ladder. I don't know how you.
But what do you think Tony Watson's going to get? I'm interested in Tony Watson. You got the geography card to play there.
I don't know. I mean, his numbers are ways down too, aren't they? I mean, strikeouts and all that. So
it's pretty good. He misses bats. I don't know what your trend line shows.
Not
I mean,
to
he,
look at swinging strike rate, but
you're not. You don't want him, huh?
I haven't dug
kick
into him
off your roster. Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't. You know, the Padres are clearly all in. So to take care of the geography thing, if they get Ohtani, they're not trading Brad Hand.
Right.
Even if they trade Brad Hand, they'd still want so much for him, and he's not that far removed from being a waiver claim. So
right.
Don't do that. The bullpen. I don't like the idea of spending big on the bullpen. I never have.
No, I agree with that. Watson's 7.7 to 8 strikeouts per nine the last 3 years. War doesn't love him, but that's more about leverage, I suppose. Let's look at the swinging strike rate, though. For swinging strike rate, 12, 12, 11, 12, 11, 11, going back the last 5 years.
And what is it against lefties?
Oh, let's see. You'd have to dive into the splits here. But 32, so he's not going to get a crazy deal. Versus lefties, a swinging strike. I don't know if they suss that out.
I would go get Justin Wilson And with 1 year left of arbitration, the Cubs.
Do you think he's burning the holes in their pocket, though?
I think that they would. I don't. If they didn't put him on their roster in a postseason, he's not Joe Maddon's favorite. He did not pitch well for them. Right. He can be fixed. He can be fixed quickly. And
he's
then,
really good.
I just really like the idea of going year to year whenever possible with relievers, 2 years at most. Keep in mind that this is my pet stat. I have vetted it with everybody I can think of, including Terry Ryan and Andy McPhail. I can't get a hold without a Ouija board of Calvin Griffith, but I'm pretty sure the Twins have never given a multi-year deal to an outside relief free agent. They have never done it. So I'm not going to count. If they bring Kinsler back, that comes with an asterisk because right. they had him so recently. But and they still might bring Kinsler back.
No, I think
but,
you're right, though. I can't remember anybody coming from the outside that was a
They've never done
deal.
It. What their pattern is, with the whether it's Jared Burton or Danny Casey Reyes Keen. Or whatever, it's to bring – they have a find. They have a low-risk find. And then, half a season in or one season in, they extend them.
And they bump them multi-year up the rungs.
They don't win. They don't like to win. That was the Terry way. That was the Bill Smith way. That was the Andy way. That we'll see about these guys. But the fact that Indians too were so expert, and the Rangers were able to find many many times relievers just in the churn that's where the guys fall through the cracks is in that churn. Neftali Feliz is out there working out for teams right now, and the Rangers know him well. And that's the kind of guy, mm-hmm. if he's throwing 95 and he's healthy, then you look past some of the numbers if you're only putting out 1 year for the guy. It's too early in the process because they got to get the starting pitcher first. But if the kind of guys that are available around Twins Fest, mm-hmm. which is a little earlier this year, it's kind of strikes me that that's a good time to do it. There'll be some interesting names that we'll be able to, relief names probably by Twins Fest mid-January that they'll be linked to. It's around the time they took, it was a little later before, but that's when they got Breslow, that's when they got Belisle. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be, and Belisle could come back here. I don't know, he did his job. There'll probably be a team, he's so well-traveled and he's so well-regarded, there'll probably be a team out there that'll give him multiple years at a raise, something like 2 years for $8 million total. That yep. the Twins probably take a pass because they want to miss more bats. But that was a pretty special makeup guy, and he beat you with his brain as much as his arm. I don't know if he can continue that, but somebody will probably buy in on that. So that's my official stance. Every year we have this conversation on Twitter and. Mm-hmm. and message boards and these podcasts is like, why don't the Twins ever go out there and get one of these relief guy, the top reliever on the market? Why don't they do that? Well, how'd Tony Sipp work out for the World Series champion Astros? They had to work. Yes. They had to work around that quite a bit to the point where AJ Hinch didn't even want to look down at his bullpen. How did, Brett Cecil, that's too much. That's 7.5 times 4. No, left-handers, go get me a step or two better Abad for 1 year, even if it's on a minor league deal. Mm-hmm. Sign four of those guys. Throw them. See who's throwing well in winter ball. See who swung by the driveline facility and suddenly throws 95. Give me two of those. Yep, thanks, exactly. Kyle. That sort of thing. That's what they'll do. They shouldn't be criticized for it because the performance – of relievers it fluctuates so greatly from year to year, especially from the left side. There's just not mm-hmm. enough data points, right, within a single year if you're especially a situational lefty. I do hope that they will finally start. Ryan O'Rourke's out the door. That's too bad. A great guy. We wish him well with the Orioles. Mm-hmm. I've said if he's just allowed to loogie, he's going to have a nice long career.
He's going to pitch another 10 years.
I think Buck Showalter will allow him to just loogie. And so one of the key points in all of this is Mulder's back on a 3-year deal. Mm-hmm. That's good. But will he be convinced finally to just let get a guy who can't get a righty out save his life, but he'll get lefties every time. Let that guy loogie for you.
Yep.
And stop this. This antiquated idea that only a few teams probably still adhere to, that every reliever has to be able to get both sides out. And I also like reverse platoon guys, and I'd like to see them, mm-hmm. use that. There are righties who own lefties. Use that guy as your that's how Blaine Boyer was for a while. They wouldn't use him that way. So one of the encouraging things I would think about all these new voices that are coming into the organization and the data and all this talk about how the data will be used. Well, let's see the Twins loogie.
Couple quick hits and then we'll let you dip. Rule 5, you think the Twins are going to gain anyone in that? Doesn't really make sense to carry anybody, but there might be somebody interesting.
There might, and I've received conflicting reports on this, but I got to double check. If Birch Smith is indeed available, he was not added, and he has major league time.
That's the Rays guy.
In the 2011 draft. I love Birch Smith. I had a nice conversation with him out there at the Fall League, and he's been through hell, as he calls it, for 3 years physically. But he was throwing 93 to 95 out there, and he's a big physical guy, University of Oklahoma. Look at his career strikeout rates in the minors. They're off the charts, and with command. He's like 28 years old. If I'm the Twins and Birch Smith comes up when I'm picking 20th in the Rule 5, I'll spend $100,000 on him and see if he comes to spring ready to be my number 5 starter. That's kind of my pet project going back to after the 13 season when I watched all that
horrific
pitching. Yeah, I noticed him after 13 mm-hmm. when I was educating myself, and I wrote a thing at that time. You can find it probably in our old blogs, and I remember advocating for Hellickson at the time via trade. I advocated for Wade Davis going back into the rotation at the time.
Yep.
I'm afraid I advocated for Joe Blanton, but he certainly had an uptick with the Dodgers later, but as a starter at the time, not anymore. I'm not on it, but I still believe in Birch Smith. If he's healthy and he's available, somebody's going to tab him for $100,000, and he just might be in an opening day rotation.
He's your Nick Turley for me.
I don't know the spin rates on Birch. There's got to be pretty good with those strikeout numbers.
What is your latest you heard on Jake Mauer and Tommy Watkins and where they're going to be?
I don't have any update on that since I wrote the story last week. It's I think Jake Mauer.
It's fluid.
He's welcome to come back. Nobody's pushing him out at all. I think he's been doing this for 10 years and he has a young family and he has a dealership. Family dealership that's booming, and he may be pulled in the direction of the real world, is my understanding. But Jake's been very quiet about it. He's not talking about it. But those who want to see him stay in the organization and know that he still is a major league managing prospect, I hope he doesn't give up that dream, because every year Baseball America does the league surveys where they ask other managers who is the best managerial prospect, and Jake wins that every year. He's got an air about him and a dignity about him, and he knows how to get through to players, and they all seem to they really enjoy playing for him. And he's I don't know if he'll ever get a chance to it doesn't appear that he'll ever get a chance to manage his brother, certainly not in Minnesota, but he's on a list of the top 15 managerial candidates in the minor leagues, probably, if not a shorter list. So that's one to watch. But Mike Quadi's going to be their outfield roving instructor after a tough year physically for him. Mm-hmm. Maybe he goes back to managing at some point, but he's good to hear that he won't be leaving the organization. And they still have to hire a minor league field coordinator, with Joel Leppel moving to a different role after 12 years as field coordinator. And he's been in a variety of scouting roles, managing roles. Maybe he goes back to managing. He's a very sharp baseball man, and just pick a level, which one do you want, Joel, sort of thing. But Lepp's very good, and it's good that he'll still be in the organization too.
All right, last thing I got, we're in Hall of Fame season. I know you're not doing your ballot quite yet. We talked about that off the air.
Not there yet. I'm letting other people put their ballots out and get slammed.
I imagine you're in the vetting process, though.
No, I'm waiting. I'm in the waiting process.
Oh, so you're not even crunching numbers or anything?
I work on deadlines. You know that. You're one of those guys, you don't have a real print deadline. I'm a deadline guy.
That's
I like to wait. My deadline is December 31st.
So you don't
I'm
have,
waiting.
You don't have any morsels.
I will send that. I will send that on the 31st, probably. and the way, it just needs to be postmarked by the 31st. I like to just sit back. There's no rush. Let's wait and see what happens. And let's see. I got other things to worry about. That's back burner.
Can we get you?
We did it last January. And it was very enjoyable.
We didn't burn any bridges last year. We're still good.
No, that was great. I think you want to tease that. If that's what it takes to get me past the Tom Schreier, none shall pass. If that's what it takes to get me invited back, I will talk about my ballot in January in advance of the announcements.
Sounds good. I will do that.
All right.
Well, hop on that plane. Bring back a starting pitcher or two, maybe a reliever. I'm just kidding. Treat them good down there. Have some fun. Try to stay healthy. Take your emergency. actually, I know it's not in Nashville, so you should be okay. But, Mike, thanks for your time. We went a little over, but I think it was good and informative and a lot of fun.
Thank you, Brandon.
You got it. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.